The NFL Network is reporting this morning the Texans will release Demaryius Thomas at some point today. I find the news to be unsurprising because of his cap number, which was $14 million. This is not just a cap number. This is they would have had to pay the Texans Demaryius Thomas $14 million to play on this team in 2019. We all know he suffered the torn Achilles. He wasn't going to come back on that number. So while this news is not surprising, it does lead to the reality this team needs to add a receiver at some point in the offseason, whether by free agency, whether by draft. They need somebody they can rely on behind Will Fuller and Kiki Kuti. I believe that to me is a need for this football team in the next 3 months.
I guess, I guess how pressing a need is it? You go across the NFL.
Secondary need.
We're like, the notion even that you need two stud guys at the top anymore is kind of falling by the wayside, or that you have to have even a lead receiver. The Texans are very lucky in that they have DeAndre Hopkins. I guess a lot of that just comes down to two things. One, how much do you really trust that Will Fuller will be, if not 100%, enough percentage points that he's still way faster than everybody else. And then the other thing is Kiki QT and his development. Where exactly is Kiki QT going to be? Because for slot receiver, it's a whole bunch of mental work. It's a whole bunch of being able to read coverages, messing with your alignments and stemming your routes and doing all these things. Where is he going to be in year two? And I don't think either of those questions have rock solid answers at this point.
Fuller, I think from a being able to run straight down the field and buy everyone standpoint, I think he's going to be fine. My concern has been with the things that I think make him special as a receiver.
Breaking routes.
Seth, he is unbelievable breaking in and out of routes. It is effortless, and he's able to do it at such a high speed. And now you're talking about planting on a knee and going to the left or to the right from said knee. And that is something that's going to take time for him to feel comfortable doing. So let's just say the first half of this coming season, Will Fuller is not going to be the same Will Fuller that we saw. I think that's just by nature of he had an ACL injury and he's going to have to get used to actually playing at game speed with that underneath him. And then after that, it's Will, after he gets to a point where he's comfortable, when he's comfortable, is he going to be the same player that he was before? Now, given the way that ACL injuries have been handled by receivers from Adrian Peterson to Julian Edelman this past year.
That's
guys,
where Julian Edelman's the guy
age.
That I keep waiting for you to bring up. Because Julian Edelman,
he was awesome in the playoffs.
You watch in the Super Bowl specifically how violent he was at getting open. Like, just him at the beginning of the routes, it was incredible how aggressive he was cutting. But that's at the end of an entire season. At the beginning of the season,
it's
not going to look like that.
Right, and from a timing perspective, it's important to remember that Julian Edelman, when he tore his ACL, it was in the second or third week of the preseason, where with Will Fuller, we're talking about midway through the year. So if we're taking a look at it from a timeline perspective, the plus for Will Fuller is he's younger, and I would imagine because he is younger, it would be easier for him to get back at up to something similar to 100%, where with Julian Edelman, who's up there in age and has played for a little bit of time, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but it did take Julian Edelman really until the playoffs to look like the Julian Edelman that we remember seeing all these years.
We're discussing the release of Demaryius Thomas, Mike, Seth, and Paul, the impact on the receiving core in 2019. There are two things with Will Fuller. One thing with Will Fuller is I don't think it's realistic, as you guys are saying, to expect him to pick up exactly where he left off. That's the first thing. The second thing is, even if he somehow were, it's not just the torn ACL.
Will Fuller to stay healthy.
The rib injury the year before, the broken clavicle, whatever it was, the year before in training camp. So he has not been the most durable guy. I think the hamstring with his rookie year a little bit, and last year as well.
The guys that make it to free agency this year, since you brought in Demaryius Thomas on a trade, you probably, if he had stayed healthy, you probably would have spent some money for him here. So like to keep him on the roster just for that added depth experience, all those things. I think they liked having a guy like Demaryius Thomas. I think they liked Demaryius Thomas talking to these guys about the playoffs.
I agree.
I think there's room for that. And lo and behold, there are some veteran free agents this offseason that might not get huge, huge, huge paydays. And the Texans, who now have about $78 million in cap space, $78 million in cap space, is there room for 31-year-old Golden Tate?
I'd sign him.
Probably not.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not? Look, it didn't work out immediately, but then towards the end, Golden Tate coming on.
He's an elite route runner. He's
a lesser
elite
guy.
When it comes to... Why? Why do you want a lesser guy?
Because I think it's going to cost too much money.
I wish... Okay, now there's somebody that's going to cost too much money, and I wish I wish this weren't so because I was so wrong. I was so wrong about this guy. When we previewed the Texans game before they played this guy, one of our listeners said, hey, what about this guy? And I was like, oh, please, blah, blah, blah. I'm not worried about him. I said, yeah, but he's really fast, and the Texans have trouble with speedy wide receivers. Robbie Anderson from the Jets. I poo-pooed Robbie Anderson, and then he torched the Texans. Torched the Texans, as I should have seen. I wish I could remember which listener it was that that basically made me look like a boob on that one.
I'd like to have a better secondary option than Sammy Coates was supposed to be as far as a deep threat wide receiver, because Sammy Coates never turned into a receiving option at all this past season. I mean, I guess played special teams. I don't even remember him playing special teams. But, you know, Mike, back to your point, like a guy like Golden Tate or some other big-name free agent, I'm honestly going to be mad if the Texans don't go and give some player a big contract this offseason if they have that much cap space. Now we're talking $76 million. We're not talking 60. 76. I mean, that
I'll
is
tell
so
you why.
Much room. Well, here's the thing, Mike. They have Deshaun Watson on the rookie contract.
They do.
They have J.J. Watt still playing at a high level. They theoretically will have Jadeveon Clowney next season. Who knows on that front? But you got to do something with that money.
Let me borrow an analogy from Mike.
You were 11-5 and you won 9 games in a row this past season. The time is now.
Let me borrow an analogy from my good friend Sean Pendergast. You have a house. The Texans are a house right now. They are a house that has a very iffy foundation, and we are talking about adding a jacuzzi in the master bedroom. That is what we're talking about right
awesome,
now.
Though. But what you're talking about
I love jacuzzis, but we need to fix the foundation,
it. Okay, but if we're talking about kind of guys that aren't superstars, you're not going out and crushing it. Like, there's going to be guys like Dontrell Inman, who was finished the season with the Colts. I would like Dontrell Inman.
Sure.
I'd love to bring him in. I don't know what kind of contract he commands, but something reasonable. And then you've got the age, the experience, all those other things, the adaptability to the scheme. If they brought in Dontrell Inman and they paid him like a healthy salary, I'd be like, all right, you know what? That's cool. He's old, but it's one extra guy to the mix that adds something to the. You've got young receivers right now.
That's what I'm thinking.
That need help coming along.
I want a steady, reliable fourth guy. I would love Golden Tate. I just think that they have too many problems, even with all that money, to be spending on luxury items like this.
Okay, fine, but then you have to get at least one luxury item. I think that you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't go after one of those things. You need a top corner or you need a top tackle.
Well,
but I would say, hey, pick one or the other, and what are you more likely to find in free agency? Is it going to be a tackle or is it going to be a cornerback? It's probably cornerback.
Probably cornerback, yeah. But I would spend most of my resources on cornerback and tackle because those are positions that are so bereft on this team as opposed to spending on Golden Tate. That's where I'm at.
Dontrell Inman, but I was thinking that Dontrell Inman had at least one good year. I guess he had the one year he had 810 yards receiving in San Diego. So there you go.
We're discussing the release of Demaryius Thomas, Seth, and Paul. Time now for Mad Takes on a Tuesday. During J.J. Watt's appearance on the Pardon My Take podcast, they brought up diets, like the keto diet, intermittent fasting, which led to J.J. discussing his experience with diets and things that his friends do.
The problem with all these things is just the sustainability of it. Because, at some point, you're going to be in a situation where you can't, you can't do it. You have to do something. And I'm like, if you can just make subtle lifestyle changes instead of doing these wholesale changes, I feel like it has
That's
to be.
That's way too rational.
I'd rather That's what just I try and tell my buddy because my buddy does all these different diets. Like everyone that comes out, he's like, I'm in. And I'm like, guy, you do every one for 2 weeks and you're done.
He sounds like my friend.
Every time you're going to grab a bag of chips, grab an apple. Like it's not that hard.
It's pretty
that
cool.
That actually made me feel better.
He mentioned me on his Barstool Sports interview.
Yeah.
I know he listens to the show. I wonder if he's got his buddy that he's told, like, you know, you sound exactly like Seth Payne. This is exactly what Seth Payne does. He'll get excited about it and he'll go back. That's why I won't actually have serious conversations with people about their diets unless they've adhered to it for a year. If you're keto,
a year.
Good for you. But yeah, you've got to have been doing it for a year, and then I'll listen to you because it's too much like religion. Like the new believer, the newly saved is the most insufferable one to talk to because in their mind, this is the only thing that matters and everything else you're doing in your life is wrong. This is it.
They're going to humble brag about it too.
Yeah. You can't. So whether it's now I would say they were talking about intermittent fasting when he brought up the sustainability of it. The cool thing about intermittent fasting, that's where you're like having like a long window, 18 hours a day where you're not eating. That's kind of, it's built into the theory behind intermittent fasting that you're going to have days where you can't do it, but that from the as long
but
as
it's okay.
As long as you're doing it a few days a week, you're kind of training your body to run on fat instead of sugar as much. So there, I would say that, but it's true. You've got to always think most likely about like how practical is this to live the rest of my life, and,
yes.
and will I do it for the rest of my life?
Because they say that the diet part doesn't really work. You have to find some kind of lifestyle change that you can actually that can last for a long time.
The other thing he talked about in that interview was after he had his back surgery, about how the only thing he was allowed to do for exercise was to walk 12 hours a day. And you remember, that's when we saw him on the sideline and he looked more like a West Point cadet than a professional football player.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to start doing. I'm going to try to walk 12 miles a day.
12 miles a day. Now, the problem with that is I'm going to bet that Seth does not have the time to walk 12 miles a
That'll
day.
That'll take me somewhere between 3 and 4 hours.
That's forever.
Off. And I got 2.5 miles in this morning. I parked and walked to the Starbucks down on Westheimer and back.
Okay.
So I got 2.5 miles in already.
That's a good walk right there.
So let me do my math real quick. I've got 9.5 miles to go. I don't know where I'm going to squeeze in the time. When JJ was doing that, he was a professional athlete who didn't have any children, didn't have a serious girlfriend at the time, and was all like his whole job was rehabbing. I don't know if I have 3 to 4 hours a day to do it.
I don't know, Seth. Houston, Texas does seem like a real sustainable place to walk 12 miles a day. Especially in like June and July where you're really like training yourself.
I don't know. June or July, it turns into mall walking. That's what you do then. Like many of our listeners listen to us. Well, like we have listeners listening to us right now as they're walking the mall.
It's
they
true.
Tell us.
And when you walk the mall, your adrenaline goes up. The stress levels raise because you see small children that are like walking in front of you and you sort of want to trample them. And there's people that are slow walkers that you want to throw over the balcony. I know. It adds something to it.
I never knew about mall walkers until I worked mall security in the summer of 2005. And I was like, wow, this is an actual society that exists
Mike
among
Meltzer,
us.
Mike Meltzer, mall cop.
Walking Mike is, Meltzer, no, mall honestly, cop, yeah. I tell football players this all the time when they retire from football. The part of the problem, your first couple of years is your whole life you've worked out a certain way and you think like, oh, this is what working out is, like puking in a bucket and like lifting as much weight as possible. And I guess that's what I do. It takes a while to learn like, oh, no, it can actually be an enjoyable experience that you want to do again the next day without it like being tied to your self-worth. And walking is one of those things that's extremely underrated in terms of just...
Good point.
Actually, there's a long-term study of people that have lost more than 30 pounds and kept it off for more than a year. And by far, the biggest common variable amongst them is that people, the people that keep the weight off walk an hour.
They walk?
A day. Yeah.
Okay.
Very low impact, very sustainable.
Good to know.
You don't need a motivating Nike commercial to get you to do it. You don't have to rehydrate with a sugary sports drink. Just walk for an hour a day. Indiana health officials say people who had contact with a bat during an Indiana Pacers game last week have possibly been exposed to rabies. The Indiana State Department of Health says anyone who might have touched the bat with bare skin during the Pacers game might want to contact the Department of Health. This I saw and I thought immediately of Paul Gallant. Paul, who, though never having traveled to the state of Indiana nor been in the city of Indianapolis.
Not even in a state next to it.
You're convinced that Indianapolis is the worst place on earth.
Awful. It's a terrible place. And I based this off of one time my dad coming home at age 8 and telling me, and when I was 8 years old, and bouncing me on his knee and saying, yes, Paul, Indianapolis is the worst city in the United States of America and might be worse than Baghdad. And I thought to myself, that might be a little bit hyperbolistic, but you know what? I decided to go with it, and my hatred of the Colts powered it even further in my belief that a city like Indianapolis and a state like Indiana didn't deserve an NFL team. And Mike, one of the things that I resent most about you is your claim that the Super Bowl in Indianapolis was a good one.
It was good.
Reject that. It was a cold Super Bowl in Indiana.
I believe that it was a good one, and I only know this because now that I've been to, what, 6 or 7 Super Bowl cities in the week beforehand, it's all about central locations.
Yes.
It's all about, like, okay, how many hotels are there near where most of the events leading up to the Super Bowl are? And Indianapolis has that. I know that everything's right down there because I've been there for the Combine and a play back in the old RCA Dome. Like, I realized that while I was even playing, and I couldn't partake of all that stuff.
What is the deal with bats showing up in basketball games? There was one in San Antonio last week.
Oh, that's right. Well, for one, Paul, we can't be hypocrites. We have one of the most famous bat-oriented attractions in
none
the
of them
world,
have rabies.
Not indoors.
The Wah Bat Cave.
It's, not indoors.
Have you ever been to the Wah Bat Cave and watched those things leave?
I remember I saw it on Hard Knocks, it looks pretty awesome.
It's pretty badass. It's really cool, especially on the right night. It's a lot of fun.
But those bats are clean bats. Like, they take care of themselves. Like, yeah, they wash, they clean shower, bats. and they all vaccinate themselves against rabies.
Well, this is where I would say, I'm just going to call the Indianapolis Department of Health a little bit reactionary. Why are they even issuing a statement? There aren't even any reports of anybody having contact with a bat. It's not like this bat was flying around and landing on people's shoulders like a pirate bat or something.
Flying around?
Yeah, it was, I don't get it at all.
I think they just want to be careful. That's my take on that.
Stupid Pacers.
Another thing that annoys me about Mike Meltzer is him calling the Alliance of American Football the Alliance. Oh. We're already going hook, line, and sinker for the company line of the AAF.
I know. Well,
they want you to call it the Alliance. Paul, Mike was right when he said that yesterday.
The critique is totally fair, but just to give you guys like a behind the curtain and look at this, when I was sitting there on Sunday, I'm like, all right, what are we going to be talking about on the show Monday? The AAF seems like it's getting a bunch of play. People checked out the opening weekend. And I read a story on Pro Football Talk specific or the NFL or NFL.com saying they want to be called the Alliance. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go on the air on Monday and call
the
Alliance. The
only alliance that matters is the alliance between the United States, England, France, and the Soviet Union during World War II. That is the Alliance. With a pounding of the fist.
It sounds like they're trying a little too hard. That's what I don't like about wanting to be called the Alliance. And they're trying to make up for the fact that AAF doesn't roll off your tongue, kind of like AAC doesn't roll off your tongue.
That's a good point.
It makes it's hard to, and it's a weird thing, but it is. Like, just think about it. You look at it, AAF, something doesn't look right about it. It's not symmetrical or something, and it's hard to say. So I'll call it the Alliance.
Well,
I don't care.
I have a very good way to fill in the blanks on this acronym. It's the Alliance Against Fun. Why? Because Trent Richardson, who scored 2 touchdowns in his AAF debut, notable great trade for one Ryan Griggy Bear Grigson, he spiked the football on his second touchdown with authority. It bounced into the stands, and officials gave him a 15-yard penalty. Why? Well, apparently the AAF is so poor, they want to hold on to their footballs for budgetary reasons because they have chips in them that are too expensive.
I think that makes complete sense. They're being fiscally responsible. Hey, footballs ain't cheap. You go into academy. I don't know how much. I mean, you're gonna pay
$20.
Yeah, $20, and you multiply it by.
The ones they're using are way more expensive.
Yeah, and they're using more expensive ones, and they have chips in the football.
Make Bill Polian pay for it.
Yeah,
Bill Polian's the commissioner of that league or whatever. I hate Bill Polian. Make him do it.
There was a Sports Illustrated piece where they followed the making of a cow into a football, and the one that this cow turned into wasn't good enough for the NFL. So it was turned into a retail ball, and they shipped it to Katy. It was like they shipped it to the Academy Sporting's Goods distribution center in Katy. So somebody right here around this area might be throwing that very cow around.
They're throwing around a failed cow.
A failed cow. A cow that wasn't up to snuff.
No.